Exodus chapter 25 verse 1 to chapter 27 verse 19, the 28th talk in a series on Exodus, was presented by David Crabtree on September 10, 2017 at Reformation Fellowship. The copyright for this recording is held by David Crabtree and is being made available to you by Gutenberg College. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. Contributions to David Crabtree may be made at www.soundinterp.wordpress.com. This material may be copied and distributed in whole, for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction, all other rights reserved. Handout number 26, Exodus 25:1 to 27:19, accompanies this talk.
We're going to be looking at Exodus. We'll actually get into the text this week. Exodus chapter 25, I think. 25. Exodus chapter 25. And I put together a little PowerPoint with some, they aren't great pictures, but I think it will help. So I'm going, if you need to move up in order to see these, please do so. Let me just, this section is going to talk about, is going to give instructions to the people of Israel for the construction of the tabernacle. And I'll start out with just some images of the tabernacle so that you know what's being talked about. This is a artist's guess as to what the tabernacle would have looked like. Notice that there is a screen that goes clear around this whole area. So inside that then is the tabernacle. Part of it is just courtyard. There's an altar here, and there's a place to wash hands here. Then the tabernacle proper is just a tent. The word that's used for tabernacle just means tent. In fact, the word that's used for this part is mishkan, which is just a common word in Hebrew for tent. The word that's used for the whole complex is ohel, which is another just common Hebrew word for tent. But sometimes the words are used interchangeably. So this is what we're going to talk about, is the instructions for how to construct this thing. Yeah, these pictures are from this book. And afterwards, anyone who wants to actually be able to see these, this will be up here and you can look at it. This shows inside the inner part, the tent part of the tabernacle. And it's divided into two parts. Back here, where the smoke is going up from, that's the Holy of Holies behind this curtain here. And the Ark of the Covenant is inside there. And then the holy place is just outside of that. And there's the menorah here. There's the table for the showbread. There is also the altar of incense, which is not mentioned in this text at all. It isn't mentioned until several chapters later in Exodus. Okay, so that's what we will be talking about. I have a couple of not real good diagrams, because it's kind of blurry, but here it shows you the layout so you can kind of see the proportions. But this is the layout described by Sarna. It was smaller, so it was harder to reproduce it. But this shows you what, according to the rabbinical tradition, this is where these would have been located. It divides into two halves, the whole courtyard. The tent portion is just this part. And this is where the sacrifices were done. And if it divides in half, so it's twice as long as it is wide, the rabbinical tradition has the tent right up to that halfway line, and if that is the case, then the Ark of the Covenant is right in the middle of that square. And according to rabbinical tradition, the altar is right in the middle of the courtyard square. Okay. Where we left off in chapter 24 was the people of Israel had agreed to be obedient to God, and God had offered to be their God. And God had spoken the Ten Commandments to them, so they had all heard that. They heard that from God himself. They heard his voice. But then there were other commandments God had for them. The people asked, don't speak those to us. Speak those to Moses and have him pass them on to us. And that sounded like a good idea to God. And so that was what was done. In chapter 24 then, Moses gives all of the ordinances to the people of Israel. He reads them out. And they have a ceremony in which they seal the deal between God and the people of Israel. Moses builds an altar. There are bulls that are sacrificed on that altar. He takes the blood from the bulls and he sprinkles that on the people of Israel. And then there is a big feast in which the people of Israel eat of the bulls that were sacrificed. The elders, Moses and some of the leaders and the elders, go a little ways up on the mountain where they eat the meal. The rest of the people are down on the plain at the base of the meal. And it's at that time that the people ratify their agreement that they will be obedient to God's commandments. Then, when that meal is done, Moses goes up on the mountain. It's not clear, quite a ways up on the mountain, apparently, for 6 days. And then on the seventh day, God calls him up into the cloud at the top of the mountain. And I would love to know what he did for those 6 days waiting to go up to the top of the mountain. He goes up into the cloud, and God speaks to him, and he is there for 40 days and 40 nights. And what follows in chapter 25 then are some of the instructions that God gave to Moses during those 40 days. And those instructions go for 7 chapters. We will be looking at 3 chapters tonight. All these first 3 chapters are all dealing with the tabernacle itself. Then the following chapters talk about the priests, what they wear, and some of the things that they will be doing. Chapter 25, the first 9 verses. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Tell the sons of Israel to raise a contribution for me. From every man whose heart moves him, you shall raise my contribution. And this is the contribution which you are to raise from them: gold, silver, and bronze, blue, purple, and scarlet material, fine linen, goat hair, ram skins dyed red, porpoise skins, acacia wood, oil for lighting, spices for the anointing oil, and for the fragrant incense, onyx stones and setting stones for the ephod and for the breastpiece. And let them construct a sanctuary for me, that I may dwell among them, according to all that I am going to show you, as the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all its furniture, just so you shall construct it." Okay, before I get into this, I should read this paragraph. If you've got the notes, this is a paragraph from Umberto Casuto about the tabernacle in general. He says, "In order to understand the significance and purpose of the tabernacle, We must realize that the children of Israel, after they had been privileged to witness the revelation of God on Mount Sinai, were about to journey from there and thus drew away from the site of the theophany. So long as they were encamped in the place, they were conscious of God's nearness. But once they set out on their journey, it seemed to them as though the link had been broken, unless there were in their midst a tangible symbol of God's presence among them. It was the function of the tabernacle, literally it means dwelling, very literally it means tent, to serve as such a symbol. Not without reason, therefore, does this section come immediately after the section that describes the making of the covenant at Mount Sinai. The nexus between Israel and the tabernacle is a perpetual extension of the bond that was forged at Sinai between the people and their God. The children of Israel, dwelling in tribal order at every encampment, are able to see from every side the tabernacle standing in the midst of the camp. And the visible presence of the sanctuary proves to them that just as the glory of the Lord dwelt on Mount Sinai, so he dwells in their midst wherever they wander in the wilderness. So the tabernacle then is that portable thing, that portable place where God can be present, that they take with them as a reminder of what they had experienced on Mount Sinai, and in particular, God's presence among them. So God gives to Moses a plan for the construction of the tabernacle. And the first thing that it talks about are all the materials that need to be gathered in order to put this thing together. Notice, first of all, that the collection of all the materials is made from the people of Israel, and it is totally voluntary. God places it on the hearts of the people that he wants to contribute, and they do so. The materials that are collected for the tabernacle are listed, and in each category they seem to be listed in order of holiness. So the first is metals, and it starts with gold, then silver, and then bronze. And as I pointed out last week, in the Holy of Holies, it will say fine gold. So it's not just gold, but it's fine gold in the Holy of Holies. Fabrics. The first is wool that's dyed a deep violet or possibly blue. It's unclear. We don't know what that word is, whether it's more of a blue or more of a violet. But that is the most holy. The next is wool dyed dark red, which is a lower grade of holiness. Then wool dyed scarlet red. Then fine linen, which is bright white. And then lastly, goat hair, which is naturally black. It's not dyed at all. They're also to collect ram skins dyed red, and the word is not clear what this word means, but they think that it means porpoise skins. And those porpoise skins would have been available when they were along the Red Sea, just before they turned inland to go up to Mount Sinai. And both the porpoise skins and the ram skins end up being used for the outer covering of the tent. Then other things that are required are acacia wood, and we'll see where that goes. And acacia wood was available in the southern Sinai. It was there naturally. Oil. And it's olive oil that's used. That's used for the lamps. Spices that is combined with the oil for anointing oil. And then onyx and precious stones. Those are going to be used in the high priest's breastplate. Where would they have gotten these materials? Remember that as they left Egypt, they were told by God to ask the Egyptians for jewelry. And they did, and the Egyptians gave them jewelry. So they left Egypt with a significant amount of fine metals and probably some other materials as well that they received from the Egyptians. The porpoise skins they would have gotten from the Red Sea, where they had been for, they had been along the Red Sea for about a month, I think. The goat hair and the ram skins were from the herds that they had with them. Remember, they left Egypt with their herds, so they would have had a number of animals with them. The acacia wood grew there, was locally available. And then the assumption is that they traded for other goods. There were merchant caravans that would have passed through the southern Sinai, and in all likelihood, they engaged in trade with those caravans. The purpose for the shrine, it says that, let them construct a sanctuary for me that I may dwell among them. So the purpose is for God to be able to be right there with them in their midst, living them right in their midst. Next section, Exodus 25, 10 through 22. And they shall construct an ark of acacia wood, 2.5 cubits long, 1.5 cubits wide, and 1.5 cubits high. You shall overlay it with pure gold. Inside and out you shall overlay it. And you shall make a gold molding around it. And you shall cast 4 gold rings for it and fasten them on its 4 feet. And 2 rings shall be on one side of it and 2 rings on the other side of it. And you shall make poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. And you shall put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark to carry the ark with them. The poles shall remain in the rings of the ark. They shall not be removed from it. And you shall put into the ark the testimony which I shall give you. And you shall make a mercy seat of pure gold, 2.5 cubits long, and 1.5 cubits wide. And you shall make 2 cherubim of gold. Make them of hammered work at the 2 ends of the mercy seat. And make 1 cherub at one end and 1 cherub at the other end. You shall make the cherubim of 1 piece with the mercy seat at its 2 ends. And the cherubim shall have their wings spread upward, covering the mercy seat with their wings and facing one another. The faces of the cherubim are to be turned toward the mercy seat, and you shall put the mercy seat on top of the ark, and in the ark you shall put the testimony which I shall give to you, and there I will meet with you. And from above the mercy seat, from between the 2 cherubim which are upon the ark of the testimony, I will speak to you about all that I will give you in commandment for the sons of Israel. So this is the first thing that needs to be, that is talked about with respect to constructing. And it's the Ark of the Covenant that is right here in the Holy of Holies. The first section of these instructions is just going to talk about the furniture that goes in the tabernacle. It will start from the Holy of Holies and then we'll move outward to talk about each piece. After it describes all of the furniture, then it will describe this tent before it moves into the courtyard, talks about the furniture there and the screen that goes around it. The Ark of the Covenant, the texts make pretty clear, consists of 2 pieces. They're talked about separately, 2 different pieces. There is the box that's down here, and there is the top, the lid that goes on it, the mercy seat that goes on top of it. And those are described as 2 separate things. Why that's important, I don't know, but they're 2 separate things. The ark itself, I've got the dimensions here, and the dimensions are in cubits. It's 1.5 wide, and a cubit is 1.5 feet. So, what? 2 and 2.25, is that it? 2.25 feet wide. Its height is the same thing, and then it's long. So this is, it's not very tall, it's not real wide, it's fairly long. It's the biggest piece of furniture inside the tent. The other pieces of furniture are the same height, so it's matching furniture. And this is just a box. It's made out of acacia wood, and then it's covered with gold, and this is apparently, this was a very common way of constructing this type of thing in the ancient world. Such things have been found. So it's acacia wood frame, and then that is all covered with gold. It's got rings on the side of it. I don't know, it has a ring on each corner. And then poles that run through those rings. So two poles, one on each side. The poles are out of acacia wood, also covered with gold. And the poles are never to be removed, never be taken out of those rings. That's true when there is the tabernacle. When there's the temple, the poles are apparently taken out of the rings. So in the tabernacle, this is all... What is, I think, being emphasized is that this is a portable thing. There's also molding that goes around the chest. Some people think that it sticks up above the chest. So it's a little thing, metal that juts up, gold that juts up and has some kind of design in it. Others think that it's a band right around the top. And we don't know, the word that's used there is not, the exact meaning of that word is not known. The mercy seat is the same size as the top of that box, so it's a lid that goes right on top of it. It is of pure gold, and then it has a cherub at both ends of this thing. Some people think that the cherubim are carved in the top of the lid, so they're the lid is flat and the cherubim are carved on the top of it. But most people think, no, that they are standing figures, one at each end of this seat. They are facing the inward and they have their wings stretched upward. All of this makes it quite certain that this, the Ark of the Covenant, is symbolizing a throne. In the ancient world, that typically the thrones that kings would sit on would be flanked by animal creatures, much in the way that these cherubim are flanking the mercy seat. Inside the chest, then, are going to be placed the tablets that contain the Ten Commandments, in all likelihood, just the Ten Commandments. And in the ancient world, it was very common for treaties to be placed in a sacred place and oftentimes at the feet of idols to gods. And the thinking was that this would assure compliance with the treaty. Sarna says, the practice of depositing legal documents in a sacred place was quite widespread in the ancient Near East. It symbolically underscored the importance of the document and projected the idea that the presiding deity witnessed and guarded it and oversaw its implementation. So this fits the pattern of a throne and inside the chest, that is the footstool of this throne, is the Ten Commandments, which would also fit the pattern of the ancient Near East. I'll just point out, in later books of the Old Testament, God's throne is likened to a chariot. Not here, but that's in books that are written much after this. And in Isaiah 66:1, the heavens are God's throne, and the earth is his footstool. So there are a variety of things that can serve as images of God's throne. Then it says that God will speak to the people from the ark. This is the place from which God will speak to the people, and the place where he will give them his commandments. He will speak, "I will speak to you about all that I will give you in commandment for the sons of Israel." Okay. That's the first piece of furniture. The next one is the table of showbread, starting in verse 23. "And you shall make a table of acacia wood, 2 cubits long and 1 cubit wide and 1.5 cubits high. And you shall overlay it with pure gold and make a gold border around it. And you shall make for it a rim of a hand breadth round it, and you shall make a gold border for the rim around it. And you shall make 4 gold rings for it, and put rings on the 4 corners, which are on its 4 feet. The rings shall be close to the rim as holders for the poles to carry the table. And you shall make the poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold, so that with them the table may be carried. And you shall make its dishes and its pans and its jars and its bowls with which to pour libations. You shall make them of pure gold, and you shall set the bread of the presence on the table before me at all times." So this next piece of furniture is the table for the showbread, which is right here. It's the same height. It's a little bit narrower, and I think it's not quite as long. Again, it's got rings on the corners, so that poles can be stuck through that and it can be carried by the poles. No one has to touch the table itself in order to move it around. On it, there is supposed to be dishes, pans, the kinds of things that you need to have a meal. Dishes, pans, jars, and bowls is the way that's translated here. In a pagan temple, one of the things that the priests would have done, and I don't know how often they did this, but on a regular basis, they would bring a full meal and place it in the temple to their god. And so they would have the dishes and the bowls and all the things that you would need for a meal. And then after it's all laid out and left there for a while, I think the priest usually ate it, but I'm not certain of that. In the tabernacle, there is to be bread that is brought once a week. Showbread is baked and placed on this table. So there is always supposed to be showbread on the table. After showbread has been there a week, then the priests eat it, and new showbread is placed on the table. To my knowledge, there's no other food involved in the tabernacle. So there are dishes and things that are there that are never used. But this is apparently, these things are there as a reminder of the meal that was eaten at Mount Sinai. And to eat a meal with someone in the ancient Near East was to show friendship. It was a sign of close friendship. The lampstand. Verse 31. "Then you shall make a lampstand of pure gold. The lampstand and its base and its shaft are to be made of hammered work. Its cups, its bulbs, and its flowers shall be of one piece with it. And 6 branches shall go out from its sides, 3 branches of the lampstand from its one side, and 3 branches of the lampstand from its other side. 3 cups shall be shaped like almond blossoms in the one branch, a bulb and a flower and 3 cups shaped like almond blossoms in the other branch, a bulb and a flower, so for 6 branches going out from the lampstand. And in the lampstand, 4 cups shaped like almond blossoms, its bulbs and its flowers. And a bulb shall be under the first pair of branches coming out of it, and a bulb under the second pair of branches coming out of it, and a bulb under the third pair of branches coming out of it, for the six branches coming out of the lampstand. Their bulbs and their branches shall be of one piece with it. All of it shall be one piece of hammered work of pure gold. Then you shall make its lamps seven in number, and they shall mount its lamps so as to spread light on the space in front of it. And its snuffers and their trays shall be of pure gold. It shall be made from a talent of pure gold with all these utensils. And see that you make them after the pattern for them which was shown to you on the mountain. This is a picture that I took of the menorah that has been built in Israel by the Temple Institute, that they intend to be used in the new the new temple when it's built, the third temple. It's on the hill just overlooking the plaza by the west wall, and it's encased in thick glass. I assume it's glass, but you can see this is their rendition of the menorah. There are three pairs of two arms coming out and going up, and then the one right in the middle, so a total of seven. And I can't tell exactly what happens at the very top of each of those arms, but my understanding is that it ends with a little cup-shaped thing, a shallow dish, but then a separate lamp is placed on top of that. At least that's my understanding. And I don't know how that would work with my understanding. So I'm not sure that I'm right, but that's my recollection. But this is their version of the menorah that's talked about here. It is there are several references to parts of an almond tree, so this is apparently symbolic of an almond tree. The almond tree is the first tree in Israel. It's the first tree to bloom in the spring. There are other utensils then that go along with this, snuffers and little trays for, I guess, collecting the ashes, or I don't know. I'm not sure what all the utensils are. The symbolism in it, this is the symbolism according to Sarna. He says the seven indicates completeness. So this is, and I think he goes on to talk about this, that this lamp symbolizes Israel itself, and there's a completeness to it. There is light, which is symbolic of life, and then it symbolizes a tree, and he says that the tree in particular that's being symbolized here is the tree of life. And I don't know the basis for for that determination. But here's what he says. Finally, the lights constitute the most powerful symbol of all, for light intimates both life itself and the presence of the giver of all life. This is the interpretation given in Shabbat 22b. The light of the menorah is testimony that the divine presence resides in the midst of Israel. Hence, in the prophet Zechariah's vision of the menorah, its light represents the invincible power of the Spirit over brute force. Not by might nor by power, but by my Spirit, said the Lord of hosts. Those are the three pieces of furniture that have been described. This one it hasn't talked about yet, and it will not talk about it until we get to the other side of the golden calf. And I don't know why that was left out. Now it's going to talk about the construction of the tent in which these pieces of furniture are placed. 26 verses 1 through 6. Moreover, you shall make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twisted linen and blue and purple and scarlet material. You shall make them with cherubim, the work of a skillful workman. The length of each curtain shall be 28 cubits, and the width of each curtain 4 cubits. All the curtains shall have the same measurements. 5 curtains shall be joined to one another, and the other 5 curtains shall be joined to one another. And you shall make loops of blue on the edge of the outermost curtain in the first set, and likewise you shall make them on the edge of the curtain that is outermost in the second set. You shall make them 50 loops in the one curtain, and you shall make 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is in the second set. The loops shall be opposite each other. And you shall make 50 clasps of gold and join the curtains to one another with the clasps, that the tabernacle may be a unit. Okay, I used my finely honed drafting skills that I learned in the ninth grade to create this little drawing. So these are 28 cubits long. They are 4 cubits wide, and that was 4 cubits was the typical width of cloth that was woven at that time. So we've got 5 strips of cloth that are all sewn together, creating this large piece of material. And then we do that again, make it another one, the same size, exactly the same. Then we put these little loops, and there are 50 of these loops. I just drew a few loops on each one, and there are gold clasps then that hold these together. So we've essentially got 2 big pieces of fabric that can be hooked together to make one huge piece of fabric that then becomes the covering for the tent. So the covering that we're looking at here is hard to see here. It's going to be this inner covering that goes over the sides and down the sides. So all that you'd be able to see, if I'm understanding this correctly, all that you would be able to see of this particular fabric is what's straight above you. And the weaving that is used for this, it has cherubim on it. So it's the cherubim are reserved for the holiest, but it also, the same cloth is used to cover the whole thing. So the whole roof would have that design on it with cherubim. And it's made of the finest cloth. Okay, now we're going to make the outer. There are going to be 2 more layers that go on top of this to cover this tent. Verse 7, then you shall make curtains of goat hair for a tent over the tabernacle. You shall make 7 curtains in all. The length of each curtain shall be 30 cubits, and the width of each curtain 4 cubits. The 11 curtains shall have the same measurements. And you shall join 5 curtains by themselves and the other 6 curtains by themselves, and you shall double over the 6th curtain at the front of the tent, and you shall make 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is outermost in the first set, and 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is the outermost in the second set. And you shall make 50 clasps of bronze. So before it was gold, these are bronze. And you shall put the clasps into the loops and join the tent together, that it may be a unit. And the overlapping part that is left over in the curtains of the tent, the half curtain that is left over shall lap over the back of the tabernacle, and the cubit on the one side and the cubit on the other of what is left over in the length of the curtains of the tent shall lap over the sides of the tabernacle on one side and on the other to cover it. And you shall make a covering for the tent of ram's skins dyed red, and a covering of porpoise skins above. So this is the same idea as the first big covering, except it's a little bit longer. So some of it's going to extend over the front, and there's going to be more that will extend over the back. It's also a little bit wider and will cover all of the other covering. it's made of a less holy material, and including, and it's got bronze clasps instead of the gold clasps that the other one had. So what we're talking about here is the next layer of covering in here that goes right on top of the other one. Then in the last verse, and you shall make a covering for the tent of ram skins dyed red and a covering of porpoise skins above. Those are the red here. They go on top, so that's the third layer on top. I don't know why they have this other layer on top of that. So they have a fourth layer here, and I don't know why that's there. Because it should have been, to look at it, it should have been red. All right, so those are the coverings. Now we're going to talk about the frame that holds up those coverings. Verse 15. Then you shall make the boards for the tabernacle of acacia wood, standing upright. 10 cubits shall be the length of each board, and 1.5 cubits the width of each board. There shall be 2 tenons for each board, fitted to one another. Thus you shall do for all the boards of the tabernacle. And you shall make the boards for the tabernacle, 20 boards for the south side, and you shall make 40 sockets of silver under the 20 boards, 2 sockets under one board for its 2 tenons, and 2 sockets under another board for its 2 tenons, and for the second side of the tabernacle, on the north side, 20 boards. And there are 40 sockets of silver, 2 sockets under one board, and 2 sockets under another board. And for the rear of the tabernacle to the west, you shall make 6 boards. And you shall make 2 boards for the corners of the tabernacle at the rear. And they shall be double beneath, and together they shall be complete to its top, to the first ring. Thus it shall be with both of them. They shall form the 2 corners. And there shall be 8 boards with their sockets of silver, 16 sockets, 2 sockets under one board, and 2 sockets under another board. Okay, so what's going to be constructed is these walls that go around 3 sides of the tabernacle that hold up these pieces of cloth that cover it. And they are made of boards that are big boards. They're about this wide, and they're 15 feet tall, each one. And it's not clear how thick they are. Then those are covered with gold. And they are put together with these tenons. So there's apparently a finger, that 2 fingers that come out of the side of each of these boards that then plugs into the board next to it. They also have 2 fingers that stick down, and those fit into what are they're translated sockets. These sockets are like bases or feet that are made out of metal that hold this thing upright. And it's got, each board has 2 fingers that go into that socket, and that socket then will hold it up. The boards are all put together then with these tenons, and you get this wall. Basically a solid wall, and then those are held together with these bars, and you can see how these bars on the outside go through rings, and then those are apparently capped off at the end, and they're holding the thing all together. And then there is also 1 bar inside the tabernacle that goes all around the perimeter of it, helping to hold these boards all together into a wall. Okay. The veil and the screen, starting with verse 31. And you shall make a veil of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen. It shall be made with cherubim, the work of a skillful workman. And you shall hang it on the 4 pillars of acacia, overlaid with gold, their hooks also being of gold, on 4 sockets of silver. And you shall hang up the veil under the clasps, and shall bring in the ark of the testimony there within the veil, And the veil shall serve for you as a partition between the holy place and the holy of holies. And you shall put the mercy seat on the ark of the testimony in the holy of holies, and you shall set the table outside the veil, and the lampstand opposite the table on the side of the tabernacle toward the south, and you shall put the table on the north. I'll stop there. So this, we're talking about this screen that goes here, that separates the Holy of Holies from the holy place. And this is of the finest material, and it's the most intricate weaving, and it includes images of the cherubim on it. And it is held up by, what is it, four posts here that are made in a similar fashion to the paneling that goes around the outside. Apparently rods between them at the top and maybe at the bottom. And then this fabric is forms a curtain that's stretched out over that framework. Then the menorah goes on the south side, I think I'm getting that right, and the showbread on the north side. I think I'm getting that right. Yeah. Verse 36, and you shall make a screen for the doorway of the tent of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen, the work of a weaver. And you shall make five pillars of acacia for the screen and overlay them with gold, their hooks also being of gold, and you shall cast five sockets of bronze for them. Okay, so this is also fine material, but there are no cherubim on it. So this, I think that this illustration is not quite right. There shouldn't be the cherubim on this particular curtain. Otherwise, it is of almost the finest materials, but not quite as fine as the materials used back here. And notice that the sockets here are made of bronze. It's got gold, but the sockets, the bases at the bottom of these posts are made of bronze. So the material gets less holy as we move out from the Holy of Holies. The bronze altar then, verse 27. Now we're going to talk about furniture that is outside of the tent itself. And you shall make the altar of acacia wood, 5 cubits long and 5 cubits wide. The altar shall be square and its height shall be 3 cubits. You shall make its horns on its 4 corners. Its horns shall be of 1 piece with it, and you shall overlay it with bronze. And you shall make its pails for removing the ashes, and its shovels, and its basins, and its forks, and its fire pans. You shall make all its utensils of bronze. You shall make for it a grating of network of bronze. And on the net you shall make 4 bronze rings at its 4 corners. And you shall put it beneath, under the ledge of the altar, that the net may reach halfway up the altar. And you shall make poles for the altar, poles of acacia wood, and overlay them with bronze. And its poles shall be inserted into the rings, so that the poles shall be on the 2 sides of the altar when it is carried. And you shall make it hollow with planks, as it was shown to you in the mountain, so they shall make it. Okay, so now we're working on this particular piece of furniture. It's an altar. It's big. It's square. It has what's called a horn on each corner. These are just projections that stick up. It, too, has the rings and is carried on poles. You can see the poles there and there. All the utensils and the altar itself are made of a covering. It's an acacian frame that is covered then with bronze. Okay, in the last section, starting with verse 9. And you shall make the court of the tabernacle. On the south side there shall be hangings for the court of fine twisted linen, 100 cubits long for one side. And its pillars shall be 20, with their 20 sockets of bronze. And the hooks of the pillars and their bands shall be of silver. And likewise for the north side in length, there shall be hangings 100 cubits long and its 20 pillars with their 20 sockets of bronze. The hooks of the pillars and their bands shall be silver. And for the width of the court, on the west side shall be hangings of 50 cubits with their 10 pillars and their 10 sockets. And the width of the court on the east side shall be 50 cubits. The hangings for the one side of the gate shall be 15 cubits with their 3 pillars and their 3 sockets. And for the other side shall be hangings of 15 cubits with their 3 pillars and their 3 sockets. And for the gate of the court there shall be a screen of 20 cubits of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen, the work of a weaver, with their 4 pillars and their 4 sockets. All the pillars around the court shall be furnished with silver bands, with their hooks of silver and their sockets of bronze. The length of the court shall be 100 cubits, and the width 50 throughout, and the height 5 cubits of fine twisted linen, and their sockets of bronze. All the utensils of the tabernacle used in all its service, and all its pegs, and all the pegs of the court shall be bronze. So, you can see how this is constructed. It's got these pillars that have bases underneath them, and then the fabric is stretched between the pillars all the way around. It is 100 cubits long, so that's about 150 feet, and it is 50 feet long, which is about 50 cubits wide, which is about 75 feet. At this end is the entrance, and you have special fabric here, but again, in this picture, it has the cherubim on the decorations on it, and it shouldn't have any decorations at all. This one would have decorations, but they would be abstract decorations. This shouldn't have any decorations at all. It's just made of fine fabric. Okay. So that's the tabernacle, and that's the furniture for the tabernacle. Notice in the courtyard then, they have bronze feet. So each of these posts has a bronze footing. And then the hooks are out of silver. So it's less precious metals as we move out from the Holy of Holies. And the fabric that goes around the whole of the outside is fine linen. So it's going to be white. It's made out of linen, so it's going to be nice looking, but it's very plain. It gets more ornate and more more desirable as you move in towards the Holy of Holies. Okay. I just want to point out three things with respect to this tabernacle. The one I've already talked about, the reason God gave them the tabernacle was that I may dwell among them. And that's going to become significant as we get a few more chapters into the book. And so this was God's solution to that problem. This was how God was going to be with them as they continued their traveling through the wilderness. The other thing is, and there I will meet you. God was going to speak to them from the mercy seat inside the Holy of Holies. And in particular, what he was going to speak to them was the clarifying the commandments that he was giving to the sons of Israel to follow. Now the thing, as I was reading through this and kind of visualizing what's going on, I find this really interesting in that this is supposed to be an indicator of God's presence in their midst. But how is this an indicator of God's presence in their midst? All there is this screen and the top of this tent that they can see. Only the priests would regularly go inside of this. Now, I think there are times when males who are not priests could go in this area. But generally speaking, it's just priests that go into here. And it's only priests that can go inside of here. It's only the high priest that can go into the Holy of Holies, and that's once a year. So generally speaking, what people see is a screen. A screen and the top of this thing. And if they're in the front, they can see a more ornate set of fabric that goes across there, but that's all they see. So how is this an indicator of God's presence in their midst? There was apparently, on occasion, the Shekinah glory was visible, and it's some kind of light that could be seen around the tabernacle. But my understanding is that was not generally the case. That was exceptional. So usually there is no such kind of supernatural indicator of God's presence. So all they see is this screen. And what's fascinating to me, and I don't really understand why, but the really interesting stuff, the ornate stuff, the pretty stuff is in there and not seen by the people of Israel, except for the priests. But it does contain reminders of Sinai. It does have in it a number of things that are designed to remind them of what happened in their experience at Sinai. And this first generation, they would have been there when it happened, and they could remember it. But as we go on, we'll have generations that come into being that weren't there, but there are the reminders of Sinai inside the tabernacle, and most significantly, the tablet that contains the Ten Commandments that's in the Ark of the Covenant. As a result, then, this is a reminder of God's presence because it reminds them of their history. It reminds them of what God did in the life of Israel in a very overt way at another time. And there are reminders of that, what God had done. And they are to remember that history and accept on faith that this tabernacle is what God had intended it to be, and a place of God's presence among them. Okay, I'm done. We'll take a few questions and comments.
So, David, this is meant to be portable.
Yes.
But it doesn't look like it's very portable. I mean, that it would take a long time to set up and take down.
Right.
So, did that indicate that they would, like, travel a certain distance and then just stop for a while and then travel again? And then when you say that the people wouldn't see any of it, do you know if it was just the priests that carried all of it? And so that after it was actually made, nobody saw it except for the priests?
Mm-hmm. First question. It is quite possible that in the 40 years that they were in the wilderness, that for long periods of time, they were in just a couple of camping places. So they may have stayed in certain places for a long time, for years, and that seems quite likely. It is portable, but you're right, it's not real portable. There's work involved in taking this down and setting it up. I assume they set this up every place that they camped, but I think it's possible that if they're moving the next day, they may not set it up. I don't know. The people that are charged with doing that are the Levites. So the Levites are descendants of Levi, but they aren't descendants of Aaron. And it's their job to take this down, pack it up, and carry it and set it up at the next place. And Sarna says that all of the indications are that these are holy things, so they have to be covered up when they're transported. There are ways that there are measures that they took to make sure that all this stuff was covered. But he says there were exceptions made when this was being transported with respect to who could see what and who could touch what. I don't know what he's referring to, because I keep thinking of the time when David was moving the ark, and is it Uriah reached out? It was about to fall off the cart. Uriah reached out and touched it to keep it from falling off, and he was struck dead. So I wouldn't be real inclined to make use of the exceptions, but Sarna says that such exceptions existed. Now, did you have another? Did I get all your questions?
Well, yes, but I was going to ask one more. And that, I mean, the idea of the ark traveling, like with the incident with Uriah, it almost seemed like later on, after the 40 years and everything, that you see incidences where the ark is by itself. So yes. Did they not bother with the whole tabernacle, or did
that is hotly disputed. There are some people who think that the tabernacle was set up at Shiloh, and the Ark of the Covenant was kept in that until it got moved to Kiriat Yearim, and they think that the tabernacle was then moved there and set up there while the Ark of the Covenant was there. Others say no, it wasn't in a tabernacle, but they had some other kind of housing that they constructed to keep the Ark of the Covenant in. But things do change over time, and it's going to become the temple. They take the poles out of the Ark of the Covenant. So there are symbolic things that are done that indicate that the temple is a more permanent kind of thing, and the tabernacle is a portable, moving thing. And I read someplace that in the New Testament, references to this thing, to the tabernacle, are more common than references to the temple. And I think that's interesting. I don't know what to make of it, but I think it's interesting.
Could you talk about the word for the mercy seat and if there's anything comparable to that in other cultures, or what that even was supposed to be?
That's a good question. Let me look into that and answer it next week.
Okay. About the what they would have seen, at the very end of Exodus, it talks about the cloud being over it.
Yes.
And when the cloud was over it, they would stay there, and then the cloud would leave, and so then they would move and follow it, and right. Then when they'd encamp, it'd be over it again. Mm-hmm. Is there reason to think that that wasn't the case? Because you said it would only be over it sometimes, or
right. Well, I don't remember. It could be that the cloud was over it all of the time that they're in the wilderness, but I'm not certain. My recollection is that it's not all of the time that they were in the wilderness, but I'm not certain on that. But that's what I'm talking about, the Shekinah glory that that descended on the tabernacle.
Mm-hmm. But your point still stands that most of that pretty ornate stuff would have been out of the sight of
right.
everybody.
Right.
Any insight into the cherubim? Why they show up on all the curtains? And
I don't really know, but there is a strong correlation between the cherubim and God's throne. One of the authors I read said that you never see the cherubim, they're never mentioned, except with respect to God's throne. And he is of the opinion that the Garden of Eden, the tabernacle and the temple end up being representations of the Garden of Eden. And so with the cherubim at the east end of the Garden of Eden, it's once again, they are protecting the throne of God. So even there, he associates it with the throne of God.
Switching gears, my understanding is that the pillar of cloud or fire was regularly with them in the wilderness, But remember, it talks about, is this not also the tent of meeting?
Yes.
So the pillar would come and stand over basically the presence of God in the Holy of Holies, and that's when Moses would go in and consult with God to get the questions answered. That,
right.
And then would depart again, I understand, when the meeting was over, when it was no longer.
It is believed by most people that this, when they say the tent of meeting, that it does refer to this. We will see in a passage coming up that there is a tent that is outside of the camp that Moses goes to and meets with God, and that's every time he goes in there, his face gets bright. And that is referred to as the tent of meeting.
And that's a different tent.
That's apparently a different tent. That's a tent that exists apparently while they're constructing this.
Ah.
So the assumption is that once this is constructed, this takes the place of that tent of meeting, and this becomes the tent of meeting.
Got it.
Okay, thanks.